Thank you for downloading the Dunkcast, featuring some of the best bits from City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks.
Hello, it's Duncan here from the City Talk 105.9 Breakfast Show, and this is another Dunkcast or Dunkcast, depending on which part of the country you're listening to this in. Featuring some of the bits we've done during the week on the City Talk Breakfast Show. Politics has been dominating. Why? Because, of course, it has been the Conservative Party conference during the week in Manchester, and we spoke to a number of people regarding this, including Bill Jones. Bill is the man behind the Skipper blog. He's also a politics lecturer during the week, and he gave us his take on how he thought the Conservative Party were performing. Talking of Tories, we talked to William Hague, Shadow Foreign Secretary and, of course, former Tory Party leader. We spoke to him on the morning that David Cameron was due to give his speech at the Tory Party conference. You can hear what Hague had to say about Cameron, about the image of the Tory Party in Liverpool, about possible future foreign policy plans should the Conservatives ever form the next government, and also about a referendum on Europe. Hear William Hague in a few moments' time. There's still ripples being felt off the back of the Wirral Library closures. We know that Wirral Council did a U-turn, and 11 libraries will remain open, though one of them in Wallasey has no furniture because the furniture was sold off because the people who were supporting the library group thought, well, they're going to close down the library, we might as well flog the furniture. Wirral Council, get your checkbooks out. You can hear more about that. We talked to Professor Mike Brocken about a Beatles MA that's just got underway at Liverpool's Hope University, with students from around the world studying the music of the Fab Four, plus another Dunkin's Donut from during the week, and one of my favourite stories of the last few months regarding a couple of cage fighters who were dressed up as ladies. They were going to a fancy dress party, they were tottering down the street in their high heels, short skirts, wearing some wigs. A couple of yobbos thought, let's have a go, fair game here, let's beat up the blokes dressed up as birds. But they didn't bank on the fact that the fellas in question were cage fighters, and they ended up taking a mighty pasting themselves. One of my favourite Dunkin's Donuts of recent months. And that's what makes up the podcast for this week. Enjoy.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks. City Talk 105.9.
Good morning, it's City Talk Breakfast live across Liverpool, North Wales and North West England. Of course, the Conservative Party conference continues today. It's the final day. Tory Party leader David Cameron set to make his speech later on today. Let's get a view on this from William Hague, Shadow Foreign Secretary and former Conservative leader between 1997 and 2001. Good morning, Mr. Hague.
Good morning.
Good to talk to you. Thank you for your time this morning. David Cameron making his speech later, 2 o'clock this afternoon. A lot of people saying it could be the speech that wins the Conservatives the next general election. Will he be as honest as George Osborne was on Tuesday? What can we expect him to say?
Well, yes, absolutely it will be. This conference has really been very straight with people, very direct with the country. The country's got some serious problems, but we can put them right. I think that is the key message that will come through David Cameron's speech, that if we do some of the difficult things we've set out this week about getting the deficit under control in this country, improving education, getting people back into work, then it is still a great country. There is still a lot of hope and optimism for this country in the future, and I think that will be really reflected in his speech.
If I may, I'd like to talk about the Conservative Party's relationship with Liverpool and the North West, because the polls at the moment are currently looking quite good for the Tories. I can't get a handle on whether or not that's because folk are fed up with Labour or because they reckon the Conservatives could do a better job. I was in the pub last night over the Mersey, a place called the Wirral, and there was footage from your party conference on the big TV screen up there, and someone in the background piped up, here we go, a return to Thatcherite Britain, and many murmured in agreement. How do you overcome that obstacle that I believe you're facing in this part of the UK?
Well, I think we have to explain the necessity for what we've set out this week is the first thing we have to do. You can't go on as we're going on at the moment. The government are borrowing £20 million every hour. And now at some point we have to stop doing that. We have to get this under control. That won't happen under a Labour government. So if we're going to have quality public services, if we're going to have good transport infrastructure and so on in the future, We've got to spend more carefully now. That is the first thing. The second thing is we need the new ideas that we've had at this conference. You know, the idea of paying the private providers to get people into work that we set out on Monday. Unless we do that, we're always going to have 5 million people permanently unemployed, which is what we've got at the moment, and millions of people on long-term unemployment. So we've got to tackle these problems, and people can, you know, they can come up with abuse about it.
Well, I don't know if it's abuse, Mr. Haig. It's this fear, I think, in this part of the country that certainly I pick up on, and I think it's something the Conservatives need to overcome. It's this kind of like, you know, 30 years ago, it's a return to Thatcherite Britain. That's some of the attitude that you're facing in this part of the country.
No, I think I understand that very well, actually, and I think whenever a political party sets out some difficult choices, you know, some tough programmes, then that will worry some people, of course. But what is the alternative to that? The alternative to that is just to be dishonest with the country, because whoever wins the election is going to have to make some very big cuts. There is no doubt about it. Even the government's own figures, the Labour Party's own figures that were leaked a couple of weeks ago, showed very big cuts in public spending. They just are not up front with the country about it. So there is no escape from that. That's the price of having Gordon Brown in charge of the money for the last 12 years. He has spent more money than the country has ever had or can have at the moment, and there is a day of reckoning for that. No way of avoiding it, I'm afraid. And if people didn't want that, they shouldn't have voted for him the last three elections.
All right. One of the things that we did yesterday afternoon when we knew we were going to have you on the show this morning is we went out and about across the streets of Liverpool, just waving our City Talk microphone around, just to get a sense of what people feel about the Conservative Party here in the city at the moment, and also your leader, David Cameron. If you can bear with us for a best part of a minute, this is some of the things that people were saying.
I don't really like him, to be honest. I think he's too southern, and he needs to come up north. And I think where he goes on about this minimum wage malarkey, he wouldn't know what it is if it come up and bit him on the jacksie.
He's being brought up high class, thinking he's brilliant, better than all of us who are just normal working class people. If he come up here, how is he supposed to help us? He's never lived the life that we have, so I don't think he can do anything for us.
I can't see him doing much worse than Brown, to be honest. I've always voted Labour, but it's scary at the moment.
I don't trust him. I think he's got a hidden agenda. The background he comes from and the clubs he used to be members of, like the Bullington Boys and all that, just shows you about his past.
It puts a detrimental slur on other parties too much, rather than talking about his own party and what his own strategy is.
I'm not over-impressed at the moment, although I would probably vote for him, but he hasn't come out with quite the answers that everybody's waiting for.
Some interesting comments there. What would be your reaction?
Oh, we've obviously got a lot of work still to do in Liverpool, no doubt about that. And I'm sure there is. I'm sure people do feel all of those things. I don't doubt that at all. And we won't win everybody over. But I think no one will be able to say after this week, they shouldn't be able to say there's a hidden agenda, which is one of the comments there, because we are really being very blunt with the country about some of the things that we have to do. And I think in the end, we'll get some trust back into politics and government, where people will see that a government will do what it says it's going to do. They might disagree with it, but they will at least be able to respect us for doing what we say we're going to do in the interests of the country. And that in itself will be a big change from what we've experienced in recent years. So I hope we'll win over some of those people in time.
I mean, some of the reoccurring comments there include the fact, and I think we're in a situation now, and I talk to a lot of the main political parties on this show, and they say it's not about personalities, it's all about policy. But you've got to face facts. A lot of people walking the streets of the UK, they see Gordon Brown or they see David Cameron and they make an immediate judgment on that, and it is to a certain extent about the person leading the party. A lot of the comments we heard there was about David Cameron's background, about Eton. Now, one of the things I've always liked about you is that you're a Yorkshireman, you're a relatable bloke, you like your ale, but in your shadow cabinet, you've got your leader David Cameron, you've got George Osborne, both of who went to Eton. Is that a problem for the image of your party?
Well, it shouldn't be. Clearly, some people do talk about that, as you say, but it really shouldn't be, because when I work with those people, I work with David Cameron and George Osborne every day, every hour, often, and you wouldn't really know who went to what school or anything like that. They're not that sort of people. I find them very down-to-earth people. They've become great friends of mine. David Cameron is really able to relate to anybody. That's one of his great abilities. And so I think people can you know, maybe I can assure them a little bit, as someone who came from a comprehensive school in South Yorkshire, that these people are not like their caricature at all, that we work together in a really good way as a team. And I think what is important is not what school you went to, but what you can do for the country. And David Cameron really can do a lot for this country.
I want to talk about foreign policy, if I may, for a second. Obviously, in your capacity as Shadow Foreign Secretary, you had a bit of a cock-up yesterday with your colleague Chris Grayling, who we've had on the show many times, because obviously he has an interest in Merseyside. Yeah. He commented on the appointment of Sir Richard Dannett to the Conservative Defence Team, which I believe is going to be officially announced later. He initially he's got confused, thinking it was a Labour idea. Mm-hmm. A little bit embarrassing. That aside, you get into government at the next general election. What foreign policy changes will you make? Out of Afghanistan, more troops? What are your current thoughts on that?
Well, we would listen to the military advice on Afghanistan. That's one of the things, of course, that General Richard Dannett has been complaining about, that ministers currently don't necessarily listen to that. We're very concerned about the situation in Afghanistan. We don't think just walking away from Afghanistan is the answer. That is more likely to bring terrorism to our streets or that of our allies. And so that's not the way forward, but we have to try to succeed. And that means properly equipped forces. That means having the right number of forces. That might involve an increase in the number of British soldiers in the short term if we can use them to train the Afghan army more thoroughly and rapidly, so that then we can have fewer British troops deployed there faster than might otherwise be the case. But we do have to try and succeed in Afghanistan. Walking away from it is not the answer.
I just want to get your views on Europe as well. It's always been an issue, I believe, for the Tories. I mean, certain commentators and columnists will say it divides the party. People I talk to on the streets of Liverpool, North Wales, North West England are just desperate for a political party to have the balls and the backbone to have a referendum on our EU membership and commitments. I reckon the political party that's prepared to really stump up for this could gain some votes. If you promise this, that could be you. Why do the mainstream political parties run scared of this issue?
Well, we don't run scared of it. I've been going on about this for years, that we need a referendum. And it's the Labour and Liberal Democrats also promised a referendum at the last election, and then they voted against it.
Well, that's the point. It's empty promises, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's been empty promises in their case. We have campaigned for a referendum. I'm still in favour of a referendum. And, of course, the type of referendum that means if we have it, it stops the whole European treaty going ahead. Now, people say to us, well, what if it does go ahead anyway? We've not had the referendum in Britain. What are you going to do then? Yeah. And I say, well, if we come to that situation, then we will set out a new way forward. But I do understand the calls for a referendum. No one has put those calls more strongly than I have the last 4 years. And the people really should have been consulted at some point in these last 4 years.
OK, final quick question. I know time's against us. I reckon this general election will see a dirty fight between the Conservative Party and the Labour Party. It's all to play for. Are the gloves off? Is this going to be a nasty fight where anything goes?
I suppose the gloves are off, but I would say this, wouldn't I? But I think dirt come from the other side. We are going to concentrate on putting forward our actual policies. You know, and that's difficult enough. That's a big task to explain to the country what we really need to do. So we're not going to go in for the mudslinging. We will concentrate on that. I think you will see a lot of scare stories on the government side, because they're behind in the polls, obviously think they're going down to defeat at the moment. That was the mood at their conference last week in Brighton. So they will fling anything at the Conservative Party to try to scare people about what would happen if a Conservative government was elected. We just have to patiently explain what we would do, and that's what we've been doing this week in Manchester.
Mr. Haig, thank you for your time this morning.
It's a pleasure.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks.
A lot of information has come out regarding people that featured in the life of Baby P, including Stephen Barker. It was known that he loved to torture and kill animals. His ability to read and write was incredibly poor. This man struggled to actually send text messages. He collected Nazi memorabilia. He also had a massive porn collection as well. He had a Rottweiler called Kaiser. You would have thought somewhere an alarm bell would have rung and they would have stepped in and said, this is not right. This man should not be in the same house as a child.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks. The show that isn't afraid to say what you're thinking.
A story doing the rounds this morning. This is in the Liverpool Daily Post. The cock-up continues regarding Wirral Council's U-turn on library closures. and the ripple effects are still being felt, because whilst you might be thinking, well, it's good news that the libraries are going to remain open after Wirral Council did a U-turn, and of course it is if you're a Wirral resident. You know, my local library in Higher Bebbington, that was due to shut down. There was an organisation, a group of friends, who had been set up to help Wallasey Village Library. And once they found out the Wirral Council were due to close them down, they got rid of the furniture. Bit of forward thinking, well, you know, we might as well try and get some money in the coffers. And they're now unable to host community group meetings because the furniture was sold after Wirral Library was told it was going to be shut down. The friends group of Wallasey Village Library had sold off furniture and other items earlier this year after the council gave a date for its closure. The Friends group was also disbanded. And of course, you follow this back, and of course, they wouldn't have done this unless Wirral Council had made the announcement that they were going to close 11 libraries on the Wirral. Now the council had done a U-turn. This particular library in Wallasey is without furniture. So I hope, Wirral Council, you're going to do the right thing and write a cheque for a few hundred quid to make sure there's plenty of tables and chairs that can be put in to Wallasey Village Library in order for the venue to host community group meetings. Because if it wasn't for you saying you're going to shut everything down, they wouldn't have sold off the furniture in the first place, would they? And also I read with interest today in the Liverpool Daily Post that the leader of Wirral Council, the elusive Steve Foulkes, is accusing the Conservative Party on the Wirral of playing political games over library closures, because they've called an extraordinary meeting of the council due to be held this coming Monday. And the meeting will discuss the decision to abandon plans to shut 11 libraries and invest £20 million in 13 neighbourhood centres. And Foulkes has come out and said the meeting was called without consultation. And if he was a cynical person, I could believe that they are trying to continue to make political capital out of the issue. Well, I'll tell you what, mate, the reason this meeting's being cancelled is because there are unanswered questions. Everybody wants to know why you've done a U-turn. You say it's decisive management. I say you had a shiftier report by someone who was appointed to investigate your so-called sham of a consultation process. You had a shiftier and thought, we can't get away with that, and you did a U-turn. There are questions that need to be answered. Don't start playing the political games card with me, Sonny Jim.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barnes.
And the lady who's joined me is Lib Dem councillor, Liverpool City councillor Bernie Turner. Good morning.
Kicks and Gillette. I'm not a football fan,
no.
But I live on Anfield Road. I'm absolutely infuriated with this pair of clowns. I think they're an absolute and utter disgrace. You know, it's got to be better in someone else's hands than this pair of Muppets.
And what people forget, Bernie, is that the fans who suffer.
This pair, I don't think, care about the club particularly. Yeah. They came into this thinking there were big books in it. Yeah. That's my personal perception.
They've got it. They can borrow a lot of money against
that's it, and for them,
that's all that matters.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks. The show that isn't afraid to say what you're thinking. Great music and great conversation. This is City Talk 105.9.
Well, the students have arrived in the city from all over the world. They're here to study the world's first Beatles MA at Hope University. And here to tell us more is Dr. Mike Brocken, who's Senior Lecturer in Popular Music Studies at the University. Morning, Mike.
Good morning, Duncan. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Good to talk to you as ever. You must be quite excited about this, because this is a world first for Liverpool. And I'm guessing, as an academic and a music fan, quite exciting to go into a lecture theatre or a classroom and start talking about Beatles music.
Well, it is, really. Although it's not strictly, you know, solidly Beatles, you know, the degree is the Beatles Popular Music and Society, so we're framing the Beatles studies within the more academic study of popular music. But yeah, it's great, and it's nice to think that a university acknowledges popular music as an academic discipline, which is something that in some universities it's still a problem, you know.
How many students on the course?
We've got 24 altogether at the moment, around about six or seven of them are actually coming in from another MA at the moment, so that leaves us with a kind of a hard core of about 18 or 19, and they're from all over the world, and I've specifically cherry-picked a lot of the students. As you can imagine, we had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of applications, all sorts of loonies, you know, but we've cherry-picked some very, very serious research.
Well, that's interesting. Use the term loonies. What's your definition of loonies? People banging on your door saying, I want to study this, and you had a look at their application and thought, no way, I'm not having you in here.
Yeah, pretty much, Duncan, I would say.
Why? What was so funny about them?
Well, Of course, you know, what you do get is the fact that, you know, we actually wanted a first degree anyway from people, and that disqualified quite a lot of people who wanted to come and study, because it's an MA rather than a BA.
Okay.
The other side of things is that you've got this area of kind of fandom that almost becomes an obsession with people, and actually we're very interested in studying that, but it's very difficult for an obsessive to kind of almost study themselves, if you see what I mean. So we've actually looked at the research potential of students and picked the ones that look as if they're very, very serious popular music studies people with an aptitude towards studying a particular band such as the Beatles. That's kind of the criteria.
And how is the course broken down, Mike? I mean, obviously it's done into modules, but just give us a sense of what students will actually be studying.
Well, the first module, as I mentioned before briefly, is more of a popular music studies module, because obviously a lot of people mightn't have the opportunity to study that at an undergraduate level, so we introduce that, and that's what we're doing at the moment. The second module is more to do with the area of Liverpool, Merseyside. It's kind of a cultural studies and historical survey of the city and the area from which, you know, bands like the Beatles and music scenes like Merseybeat emerged. The third module is more of a musicological module, and we're starting to look at the Beatles as musicians and composers. The fourth module is more to do with ethnography and anthropology. In other words, getting out there and interviewing people. Some of the oral histories now to do with the early days of the Beatles and pre-Beatles is slipping beyond living memory, really. So we need to address that. And also, I'm very interested in the way that the city is now reacting in a kind of a tourist way to the legacy of the Beatles. So we want to get the students to get out there into the field and look at the way they're being marketed now and how that compares to the city, you know, from which they emerged. And then, of course, there's the usual dissertation, which is negotiated with their tutors.
Sounds fascinating. Well, listen, we'll keep a watching brief on this, and over the course of the next few months, maybe get a student in or two and just find out how their studying's going.
Yeah, by all means, we can certainly do that.
Good.
I'm sure that they'll tell you what a tyrant I am.
Yeah, well, your reputation precedes. I only joke. Mike Brocken, good to talk to you. Have a good day, and thanks for your time this morning. That's Dr. Mike Brocken, senior lecturer in popular music studies at Hope University, the world's first Beatles MA, just started at Hope University. Students from around the world studying the music and the impact of the Beatles on popular music.
The best of Barks. City Talk 105.9.
Let me just tell you a quick story. I was on the train last week and I had to go down to London, and it's all right. You know, you get out of Liverpool Lime Street, and as long as there's no delays on the Virgin line, you're kind of like in London in a couple of hours. And I always stock up on magazines when I go on the train because they're boring. I don't like using my mobile phone because I don't think it's fair to inflict my conversations on other people. I don't like using my laptop on the train either. So I get a load of magazines from Smith's on the concourse there, and I get in the train. And one of the magazines I picked up was Total Politics, because I thought, well, I do this kind of radio show every weekday morning across Liverpool, North Wales and North West England. I need to keep abreast of what's going on in the world of politics. And a gentleman who was featured is the man we're about to talk to. His name is Bill Jones. He's Professor of Politics at Hope University, and he's author of the Skipper blog, and he's on the line. Morning, Bill.
Hi, Duncan.
Good to talk to you. Thanks for your time this morning. I wanted to get you on for a couple of reasons. One, because you do regular updates on your blog. I think it's fair to call it a left of centre blog. Are you happy with that?
Yeah, I'm a member of the Labour Party, and I suppose you should. I'm left of centre. I'm less keen on the government these days than I was in, I don't know, 1997 onwards. But I'm still a member of the Labour Party, and I still support them rather than the Tories.
Okay, I want to talk about your thoughts, because I know you've, being a political animal, you look at the Conservative Party conference, and you've been looking at it this week, and just find out your kind of take on what some of the key players have been saying. But I just want to focus on your blog for a second. I mean, why set up a blog in the first place? At what point did you think, do you know what, I'm going to start writing about this and putting my thoughts on the internet?
Well, it's strange because I've been a political educator, and I teach students, adult students, undergrads, and then I also write books and articles about the new technology. And I thought, well, this is another outlet, you know, for what I do. The only problem is you don't get paid for doing it. But, you know, it's part of the mission, if you like, I see that I perform. And so I did it, and it's fun.
What's your kind of take? I mean, you're a professor of politics at Hope University, on the whole arena of blogging, because, you know, we've seen scandals kind of being revealed by bloggers. There are people out there. You have people like Ian Dale, who's a Tory blogger, Guido Fawkes, you know, who is taking credit for the downfall of Damien McBride, who was one of Brown's spin doctors. I mean, blogging now, do you think it's a major area when it comes to politics, and is it going to grow?
Well, it's not really major yet. I mean, I think the Damien McBride case is relatively isolated, and Guido deals in gossip and you know, that kind of stuff. The lower echelons of what political news is. I think Ian Dale is more like he's a sort of Daily Mail of bloggers. He's much read. He's reasonably sensible. And of course, he's right wing, but I kind of admire what he does. But I don't think you see, these are one man operations. A big newspaper will have hundreds of staff. There's a limit to what a one man show can do.
Yeah.
You know, you can't send out reporters to cover a conference here, an interview with a major politician there. You haven't got any people in America, correspondents. And occasionally we get leaks. But, you know, I mean, the Damien McBride thing was just sort of a one-off. I'd like to see any other major coup that bloggers have achieved apart from that. We're still sort of on the periphery. We're little gadflies as yet. But I think we're moving, just like the Americans are, much more into the mainstream. Newspapers are in decline. Blogs are on the up. So the future is more power, more influence. But at the moment, I think we're still quite peripheral.
In your capacity as a blogger, what's your current take on the Conservative Party conference? I'm thinking at the forefront of my mind, I want to get your view on George Osborne yesterday. He made, as some newspapers this morning are reporting, quite an honest speech. We're all in this together, he says, despite the fact that he's a millionaire himself. What's your take?
I've got no brief for the Bullingdon Club side of the, you know, the Notting Hill set of the Tory party. But I have to say that I was impressed by George Osborne. And, I mean, he's taken the risky but honest route and saying, well, you know, we're going to give you pain. And, you know, politicians don't normally say that. I sort of wonder how the polls are going to respond. I mean, if they respond positively, then I think you could say it was a risk that was boldly taken and worthwhile. But, you know, to offer people a hair shirt as an election approaches, that's, you know, it's either very brave or very foolish. But I think it's honest. And I think if, you know, even if Labour got in, which I very much doubt, they'd have to do something similar. I don't think they'd be as honest. You know, just governments get corrupted by power and the practices of power. And I think Labour is in that situation now.
I watched Osborne's...
Basically...
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, I watched Osborne's speech yesterday and I thought he talked a very good game. But the back of my mind was the fact that both in his case and also Cameron as well, they're from privileged backgrounds. And you've got to look at this. And I'm just wondering whether or not people will think it was very easy for you to stand up on stage and say, we're all in this together. We've got to tighten our belts. There's going to be a lot of pain. But actually, you yourself, you're not going to have to go through any of that pain given your personal wealth. Do you think that gets in the way of getting the message out there?
Well, it does. Then it does with the Labour Party as well. I mean, they're on not fat cat salaries, but very comfortable salaries, and so are MPs. So, you know, it cuts both ways. But at least they're saying, you know, we're all in it together. Not a bad slogan, really. They're very sharp, those people running the Conservative Party. And of course, they've looked at Tony Blair and modelled themselves to some extent on his strategy.
Yeah.
And there was nobody sharper at politics and the art of winning elections than Tony Blair.
My final question, Bill, is this. I mean, when I talk to people on this radio show and, you know, in a pub somewhere or even a cabbie or whatever, they kind of, the one thing that comes back is this slight lack of ability, it seems, of the Conservative Party to connect with people in Liverpool. Do you think that's a fair comment?
Yes, because, you know, the Scousers have got unhappy memories of the early 80s. Mrs. Thatcher wouldn't allow Michael Heseltine. Remember the paper? It took a riot. Yeah. She chucked it out. He ignored it and pursued a sort of personal mission. They look at the... And then the Tory paper, The Sun, you know, need one say more. Mm. And add to that the traditional perversity and sort of again the world, or again the establishment attitude of the Scousers, they are resistant to the Conservative message. I mean, I celebrate that. I mean, I love the fact that I work in Liverpool, and I love the attitudes of the people there. But, I mean, Liverpool's only a little part of the UK, and I don't think it's going to be enough to stop the Tories getting in.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks.
We're talking about words this morning because I like words. One of my favourite words is bosom. Not because it's dodgy. Bosom is the kind of word you can't say without actually smiling. Say it to yourself.
Bosom.
Yeah, you see, there's a little smile in your voice. Say it again.
Bosom.
It works. I remember once I was on a school trip to France and I did something rather naughty that involved chucking stones off a cliff and not realising there were some French people below. But you know what they made us do? They made us sit in this hotel room and copy out the definition of the letter A, which is the first, obviously the first bit in the dictionary. And it took us 2.5 hours.
Really?
It's one hell of a punishment.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks.
In a world full of bungling bureaucrats, power-crazed politicians, jumped-up pen pushers, and the plain old stupid, one man fights a lone battle for sanity, armed with a sword of vitriol and a shield of common sense. Duncan Barks takes on the pillocks the only way he can, by awarding them the title of Duncan's Donut.
Today's donut is brilliant. It really is. It is a delicious two-fingered salute to the yobs in society. In fact, it's more than a two-fingered salute. It's a punch in the face. Let me explain. Two boozed-up yobs out and about in the town picked on a pair of drag queens and tried to start a fight. Unbeknown to them, it turned out that the drag queens in question were cage fighters. Out on the town, on a fancy dress stag night. This is a beautiful story, ladies and gentlemen. Retribution was swift and painful, and within 3 seconds, Dean Gardner, 19, and 22-year-old Jason Fender were left sprawled across the pavement in agony. Trouble flared when the thugs started taunting the men as they walked through a city centre in women's clothing and wearing heels. Bare-chested Gardner, the thug, walked up to one who was wearing black hot pants and a pink wig and hit him in the face. But the victim's friend, dressed in a short dress, stockings and suspenders, leapt into action and floored Gardner and his mate Fender with a string of lightning-fast punches and kicks. One of the cage fighters then bent over the pair and picked up his handbag before calmly walking away. I'll tell you, one of the reasons I'm laughing is because there's CCTV footage that has been shown to a court in Swansea regarding these two drunken yobs and the battering they had. And the Mirror newspaper on page 13 today has stills from the CCTV footage. And there is indeed a bloke in a short skirt and a pair of suspenders knocking 7 bells out of a drunken yob who thought it was acceptable behaviour in today's society to have a go at a couple of drag queens. Unbeknown to them, they were cage fighters in disguise. It's a beautiful story. Have a look at the pictures. Page 13 of the Mirror. Well, Gardner and Fender, you two, you picked on the wrong people, didn't you? And that's what happens when you have yobbish behaviour in society. Goes without saying, your donuts.
Duncan's Donuts.
Find out more about City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks at citytalk.fm. We hope you've enjoyed the Dunk Cast. If you have, please download again next week.